The Final Furlong Podcast with Emma Kennedy is proudly brought to you by All About Sunday, the ultimate racehorse ownership experience. Download the app and get involved today. All About Sunday, we love racing. And by our official betting partner, Kalugi Sportsbook. Kalugi offer betting on all sports, immediate interaction with experienced traders, with instant withdrawals and the best odds guaranteed on UK and Irish horse racing. Kalugi also have betting pitches at tracks across the UK. Join us now at kalugisportsbook.co.uk.
And you're welcome to the Final Furlong Podcast as we look back on the weekend's action and particularly an emphasis on a superb classic victory in the company of multiple Group 1 winning rider, Royal Ascot's leading rider last year and the reigning champion jockey, Oisin Murphy, is back with us on the Final Furlong. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Hi, Emma. Thanks very much for having me on. Lots to chat about. There was some brilliant racing over the last week or so.
Yeah, fantastic. First question for you is, did you enjoy your time with Sky?
I did. I only did 6 hours in the whole week, but it was great that they took me on and I had a reason to be at Royal Ascot. And I hope that people enjoyed the little bit of insight I kind of gave.
I thought you raised the bar there to a whole new level. And the interview that you did with Alex, by the way, where you spoke about what's gone on in the last year, was very, very impressive. I kind of wanted to say to you initially that it was very emotive, but I was amazed at just how strong you were on camera. You didn't break. But you were remarkably honest, and that's a very, very brave thing to do, and it will help other people, believe me.
No, I hope so. Look, I suppose it has got to a stage now. I've been off quite a long time, and I've accepted the suspension and, the difficulties I faced and created for myself also over the last few years. So I was happy and keen to give an insight, really.
Well done. And if there was one criticism, it would be that they didn't use you more. When I came off TalkSport, I was watching both ITV and Sky, and I thought you were excellent. Well done, mate. Well done. It's all these Final Furlong podcast hours you're racking up.
Absolutely.
You're getting all the experience in. But no, seriously, like the very fact that you're even coming on here and going to break down the Irish Derby and Trushan's victory for us, amongst others, and talk about Frankie Dettori watch. Do we have the special effects there? No? Oh, we'll have them later on. is tremendous. And can someone get a cream pie and put it in the face of that journalist who wrote that opinion piece for The Sun?
I know.
Screw that guy. Jeez. We want more Oisin Murphy, not... What's he supposed to do?
Yes.
What are you supposed to do, Oisin? Sit in the corner wearing the Bull Boys hat for the rest of the year and contemplate what's gone on. Effect that. We want your insight. And there's no rule to say that you can't do this. So happy day. I think it's terrific you're doing it. And we'll get to talk about some of your show jumping as well, because there's a horse who mimicked a dressage performer before a start at the Curragh. So we'll chat about that.
Yes. Yeah.
It seems like they did attract a decent crowd. I don't have the actual crowd numbers. Tuala's going to get that for me in a second. I forgot to pull it up. So she's going to scarp her off and do that. And as she does, Westover wins for Colin Keane and Rafe Beckett. Or as the commentary says, Ralph Beckett. That's now there for life.
He doesn't like being called Ralph.
He does not.
No. I call him Rafe. It was... That horse is remarkable. He's improved so much with every start. He definitely enjoyed the Curragh. And I think if he improves another tiny bit, he could be a real superstar. I mean, to win a Group 1 by 7 lengths, I felt like Piz Badil is a decent horse and offered a good form line to the race. I was impressed by the horse's attitude. And Colin gave him an uncomplicated but perfect ride. And it's lovely to see a race... of the Irish Derby's Irish Derby, we say Derby sometimes, and that sort of standard being won impressively by a really good horse. It's good for the race and it's good for the people watching.
I didn't agree with Rob Hornby's assessment that he was unlucky, and so I read him completely wrong. going into the race. I'm a big fan of Pisbadil, as you know. I couldn't believe he went off 18s. Everything else we talked up on the final furlong shortened dramatically. This fella goes for a walk in the market. But he is a Derby trial winner, and Donica was absolutely adamant he didn't handle Epsom. So he was 9-1 for the Derby. He goes off 18s for this. I don't really understand that.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. Given
the manner, though, of Westover's performance, if Epsom is a fairer track, maybe he does really challenge Desert Crown. And if Desert Crown had come over for this race, it would have been a fascinating battle between the two. He was so good here, Oisin, that I know there's been talk of the St. Ledger for him, and Hurricane Lane won this race and then went on to win the St. Ledger. But I'd go for the Arc. I'd be... Because, you know, the second a horse enters the gate for the St. Ledger, that is it. Game over for stud. You're a National Hunt Stallion. You know, I bring to you Crystal Ocean. You know, 10 furlong group performer, a proper group one winner, National Hunt Stallion at Coolmore.
Yeah,
so
he has covered a lot of flat mares as well. I tell you, I think Westover would be an obvious horse for the St. Ledger. I don't feel he has as much pace as Desert Crown. I feel like Desert Crown would have no problem naturally coming back to a mile and a quarter, whereas I feel like Westover probably might even improve for going a mile six. But I agree with you. The Arc would be an obvious race for him. I mean, the way he hits the ground, you think autumn ground in France would suit him. And obviously, it's the one race that everyone, if you have a decent staying type of horse or middle distance staying type of horse, you want to go for the Arc at Longchamp in October. But I was just very happy for the race. I think they're two very good horses, but for me, Desert Crown has more speed than Westover.
And we're going to see Desert Crown in the King George, and we might see the source in there as well. That would be a good test for him. That would be a good idea to figure out where exactly they are. If he gets close to Desert Crown again, I think there's no problem in then rolling the dice. Desert Crown is definitely going for the Arc, so why not aim in that direction? But if you want to go and take another classic, I could understand why you would go for the St. Ledger as well. I suppose in flat racing, my brain is always thinking about... you said one day here on the show that your little mind was trying to contemplate something. And ever since you said that, that's been something that I keep saying now. My little mind is struggling with this. And your brain is a whole lot bigger than mine. But I do think about a horse's second career on the flat. And so I suppose that was in the back of my mind with the St. Ledger. But look, if he goes there, it becomes a fascinating race, particularly if Roger Varian's Royal Ascot winner, Elder Aldarov, if he's going, the Queen's Vase winner, Changing of the Guard may very well end up there too. So it becomes an intriguing race, but I would always be looking at the Arc for him. Obviously, the Curragh is a much fairer track, and he's absolutely buried the opposition here, and it's an example of just how good the Curragh can be for races like this. Pisbadil ends up being beaten quite a long way. What would you do with him next?
I thought it was interesting what Donica said afterwards. You know, like, he might come back to a mile and a quarter. I don't think they'll be in a rush to make any decisions with him, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking about the Grand Prix de Paris. Would you go for that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a race that probably isn't as difficult to win as some of the other Group 1 three-year-old races. It's the old French Derby. Obviously, the Prix de Jockey Club is a mile and a quarter and a little bit now, and that's the new French Derby. But you know, it still takes some winning, and it sounds like a good idea. I mean, I feel for Donica because his horses seem to be in very good form. He's had so many seconds this year, and you know, you convert some of them to firsts, and everyone thinks you're on top of the world. You know.
Yeah, exactly. It's the bounce of the ball, but. You know, to his credit, they're performing well. It's just a matter of whether or not they can actually hit the winner's enclosure. But I think it's only a matter of time before there's a first beside Pisbadil. But it was striking how far Westover pulled clear of everything else. Which brings me to Tuesday. It was a funny race tactically.
Yeah.
You know, in that those who were up at the pace they are the ones who have ended up fighting out the finish, and those who were trying to come from off it couldn't do it. Tuesday was a good bit back, and maybe Ryan Moore didn't expect the race to play out in the way that it did, but it was a funny run race.
It was interesting to hear Aidan's comments that perhaps he gave Ryan a little bit of the wrong information. I read somewhere that in an interview, he said that perhaps they got it wrong, which is lovely. You know, from Ryan's point of view and everyone else's, it's nice when the trainers kind of on your side, and it doesn't really matter who was to blame. And perhaps, you know, she's had a few hard races there. Perhaps she wasn't at her best. But, you know, it's refreshing to hear those comments from Aidan, you know.
Very much so. It also just goes to emphasize, while Aidan O'Brien will heap praise on everybody else at his yard when he wins, and sometimes that irks people, and I don't understand why, by the way. I don't understand why you have a problem with the best trainer in the world wanting to compliment his staff at home. But which is good to know, but it further emphasizes the fact that anytime something goes wrong, Aidan takes the blame. More often than not, I can't really remember, maybe the Spencer year, where he would have a go at the jockey. He just doesn't do that. Which is in stark contrast to what's happening on the other side of the Irish Sea right now. But that bond that those two have is very strong, and it is great that Aidan was the one laying down on the wire to let Ryan Moore walk over it. And it's intriguing with her because there's a subplot here in that she gets supplemented for the race. And as you know, Oisin, having ridden for Aidan, and no doubt you'll do so for many more years, he and Coolmore's ethos is all about stallions for the future. And the Irish Derby is a stallion-making race. But changing the guard was rushed to Royal Ascot to make it there. He could have run in this race. They chose to go for the King Edward VII instead. They didn't run Stone Age. It seems now that 10 furlongs is very much going to be his maximum distance from now on, unless something changes with him physically over the next few seasons. I imagine he'll stay in training next year. They don't really seem to have a massive amount of strength and depth in the middle distance department.
No, but you go through stages of that, you know, like the pedigrees are there, and a lot of those horses are related to champions, and I'm afraid it can just be like that. You know, they seem strong in the two-year-old division, and Kyprios looks like the stare that everyone's going to be looking forward to watching running over the next while. Looking at the King George picture, you're trying to see what they might run, and just further on, races that we're used to seeing them really having strong chances in, but that will change, you know, it'll change again.
Yeah, I would imagine a little bit of a break now for Tuesday, and possibly back for the Yorkshire Oaks. Maybe they'll rush her to the Yorkshire Oaks.
That would make sense.
But I would say
something like that would make sense, absolutely.
Which, by the way, if she wins that, she's back in contention for the Ark again, so...
Precisely, yeah.
And she'll be hard to beat there. But Westover, very, very exciting. Ultimately, though, you would go St. Ledger with him.
I think so, yeah. I mean, Rafe as well is a traditionalist, and I think the Judmont team, you know, there's no doubt, look, why can't they win a Ledger and then come back and train the horse at four and win a mile and a quarter group one, or, you know, win a couple of them with him? Like, they're not under severe pressure. They have some superstars. They've got his sire, Frankel, and they've got Kingman, and they have Betha Brett, who's doing okay as well at the moment. They're not struggling for horses, and Frankel and Kingman aren't that old, so I don't think they'll be panicking.
Yeah, I don't think they will either. A good day all round for the team. We'll move to the feature race then on the Sunday at the Curragh, which was the Pretty Polly Group 1. And Le Petit Coco drifted out to nines. Paddy Toomey was very confident that she'd win, and that's exactly what she's done. Beats William Haggis's Maestra. There is controversy, though, in that Russ Carberry ends up getting disqualified. We'll chat about that in a second, but Le Petit Coco, daughter of ruler of the world, she was terrific here, I thought.
Yeah, so Ruler of the World was probably the first proper horse I ever rode work. That was thanks to Aidan. He allowed me to gallop him on soft ground on the grass one day, and he went miles clear of the group. And sure, I had no idea really what I was sat on, but I knew it was fast. And this filly has been expertly campaigned.
Can I ask you, Oisin, just before you go on to talk about Le Petit Coco, just to get an insight into the stallion, was this before he raced?
Yeah, he had an injury too, and towards the back end of the season he got going again, and he felt like an absolute machine, you know. But I was 15 or 16 years of age. I didn't really know much about superstar horses, but I wanted to learn about them.
Yeah, and of course he would end up being the Derby winner, and he'd win the Arc Trial in Longchamp.
Well, yeah.
So he was a class act in his day for a horse who didn't race very often. So talk to me then about Le Petit Coco. She's taking her sire's a lot of her sire's class.
Yeah, I think she's been incredibly handled. You know, she's won 4 out of 5 starts for Paddy Toomey. I don't know if it's 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 6, but she's only been beaten once for him. She's literally improved at every start. I thought Billy gave her a lovely positive ride. I remember watching her beat Love last year, and I thought, God, Love might be at her best, but you know, they chose a good spot there for her. They're making her a very valuable filly. I don't know Paddy Toomey, but he operates at an incredibly high strike rate. I know where his stable is, and I admire him. He's doing amazing stuff, really.
Yeah, he's not far from Blake in Tipperary. I think Blake could see his horses working from Blake Manor. we talked about him. Oh, we talked about him probably 5 years ago. Like we were just very excited by this trainer coming through. And obviously, it's still very early days in his career. Mm. But God, he attracts the big owners. He does remarkably well with the team he has, and he's terrific at placing them as well.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know much about his operation. I know it's in Golden and County Tipperary, so basically between Aidan O'Brien's and Tommy Stacks, and we're closer to Tommy Stacks or Fozzy Stacks. And what a man! I mean, the partnership he has with Billy Lee seems like something you dream of, and they're hitting the target regularly.
Yeah, and Billy Lee doing the business for him as well, as you say. This controversy then, which Paddy Toomey is going to appeal, they paid a €30,000 supplementary fee for Ruth Carberry to run in the race. She ends up coming back weighing in light, but this is something that Paddy Toomey is going to fight. What did you make of how all of this played out?
Look, listening to Paddy Toomey, the clerk of the scales might have been off. The way I listened to the situation was Wayne was on the scales, and the clerk of the scales said you need to take £5 out. Wayne took the £5 out, got back on the scale, weighed out, and when he came back in, they are saying he was £5 light. So it's interesting. That's, thank goodness, has never happened to me. If there was some error, I feel for everyone. You know, it's not something you want to happen. And particularly when they supplemented Ross Carberry, that it cost a few quid. And it was also great bit of placing to get her third in a group one. I just think it's a nightmare, and I hope they can rectify it, but it won't be easy. You know, if she carried £5 less than she was supposed to in the race, well, then she wouldn't have finished third. I don't know what they're going to do.
It's a very, very tricky one. It does appear as though the clerk of the scales does need to be properly questioned on this, because if he's telling Wayne Lorden, you're £5 too heavy, but then you're coming back in and you're £5 light. You know, there's 30 grand been paid to supplement this horse. They've lost money.
Yeah, and Kevin, just like I know from riding a little bit in Ireland, you know, the valets, they try and send you out the correct weight. It would be unlikely you'd be a full 5 pounds wrong, because they're looking at the same race card that the clerk of the scales and everyone else is looking at. You might be half a pound wrong or something because they're so busy, you know, or there might be a small discrepancy between the scale and the weighing room and the scale. Where the clerk of the scale sits, but it's unlikely it would be 5 pound wrong, you know. So, it's just, I say it's interesting, but for the wrong reasons. Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, it's also highly unlikely that a jockey of Wayne Lordan's experience is going to balls that up as well. I mean, he would know the time of the day, so something's not quite right. Thunderkiss ends up getting third, so that looks great on her page. For George Hurd, a terrific weekend. But this daughter of See the Stars, as I was saying, the owners lost 3K. They've now ended up losing the 30 grand because you're only getting 27 for third. But it's the value to her page is what's so important here. So it's a mess and it needs to be sorted out because the owner's not happy. Paddy Toomey's not happy. But I don't know how they... how they reverse it unless the clerk of the scales says oopsie, and look, we'll have to see how that pans out. Right, I don't know if the work experience kid was using the Racing Post's Twitter, but greatest flat performance of all time. Okay, calm down now. Trushan, Northumberland plate, terrific stuff. He was beaten off a lower weight last year. Great ride from Holly Doyle. Break it down for us and then talk to me about this greatest race of all time.
Well, firstly, they're trying to create a headline, and of course they are, because and they've been successful because we're talking about true. You know, the fact is, it was a wonderful performance and he's a top-class animal, but, you know, we all expected him to win. He's better than those horses. You know, I know Spirit Mixer quite well, and Spirit Mixer is getting a lot of weight off him, but at this very moment, Spirit Mixer isn't a Group 1 performer, and Trushan very much is. So, you know, realistically, I'd say what you want about weight, but class is class. I thought Holly gave him a very good ride, sensible on a stiff track like Newcastle, sit in a little bit, and don't get there too soon. I thought it was a good, she used her brain.
She did. It also got a little bit rough there.
Yeah, it's going to though. You know, those big slow horses falling back into your lap, and it's a long way around there on a stiff track and competitive sort of race. At one time I was concerned about Alan King's other runner, Rainbow Dreamer, if he shifted right at all and her momentum had to stop. I mean, that could have actually been enough to stop her winning the race. But those are the sort of split second decisions that sometimes go right for you, and when they do, it's all good. But if they don't, you know, you can look silly and you can be responsible for the horse not winning.
Yeah, she had to get busy on him 5 furlongs out. And that's kind of where they got a little bit snatched up. And then a furlong out, you know, even 2 furlongs out, she's having to work really hard on the horse. I love this performance. And look, I was raving about it. I was presenting TalkSport 2's coverage of the racing on Saturday, and which is always a pleasure. And I was blown away by what he did. There is a line, though, even in the Racing Post's analysis of the race, where they say he's missed the Gold Cup due to the fast ground, but he's surely enhanced his reputation even more than if he'd won that race. Come on, man! That's the Gold Cup! What are you talking about?
I don't agree with that at all. I know the second horse, and look, it is what it is, and people are entitled to their opinion.
Yeah. He's given him 2 stone. Can I just ask you about weight? Mm-hmm. This is a Group 1 performer. He's already proven that. So Ruby Walsh said at a Cheltenham preview, and to be fair, he may very well have a very different opinion now, but it was probably 10 years ago, and somebody was asking him about a horse that he was going to ride at Cheltenham who was carrying top weight, and was like, oh, is he not going to get burdened down? And he said, The further you go, the less weight matters. It's about the class of the horse. They can either do it or they can't, but I wouldn't turn around and say weight was an excuse. Now, that's what he said then, and I remember going, huh, that's interesting. He said, have you ever been upside a horse? And he's right. Horses are big, powerful animals. Is that amount of weight really going to be the difference between winning and losing when it comes to a Group 1 performer?
Yeah, I didn't think so. You know, I thought he, if everything went right for the horse, he'd be able to lump that weight. Look, they say weight stops trains. I don't know enough, really. I mean, I haven't ridden many top weights to handicap victories. And, you know, I honestly don't really know. I was given an interesting stat a couple of years ago that mightn't be as valid now, but like in handicaps, basically the top third of the weights win like 75% of handicaps and in Britain, and I thought that was interesting, and it kind of makes sense. You know, the best horses are the highest rated ones, and they tend to be the ones that win the races, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously you have exceptions, horses coming in there unexposed off lightweights that are way better than their mark, that happens, but yeah.
Listen, it's a performance that will live long in the memory, but the idea that it's like greatest performance in a race ever is just it's a bit much. And
it is, yeah.
Yeah. Even to then try and say like this is greater than winning the Gold Cup. No, it's not. No, it's not. But it will be fascinating to see Kyprios and Trushan and Stradivarius, whoever is going to be on board him. Dun, dun, dun. It will be very interesting to see these horses clash, and we'll see then. And when Kyprios spanks them, the Racing Post will have to just re-edit all this stuff afterwards. A shout out to Hugo Palmer, by the way. I did an interview with him Saturday morning. He could not have been more bullish about Zoffy. He was incredibly confident about him.
I honestly, you know, on pedigree, you'd never think a horse like that would stay that far, you know. Son of Zoffany, he did very well, and look, he's proven himself.
And he's had the third and fourth in the Northumberland Plate as well, and he went to college in Newcastle, so it means an awful lot to him. He's a Newcastle United fan, and I just thought it was absolutely tremendous. The way he was so bullish, I actually said, you know what, mate? Because I'd spoken with Paul Jacobs earlier that morning for his analysis of the day. And he was like, I don't want to talk about the 255. It's muck. And the more I went through the form, the more I was like, who the hell am I going for here? And so I actually just said to him, you know what, Hugo, you're so bullish about this. Let's just end the form study now. Zoffy wins. My producer, Ross Bellamy, goes and backs the horse. How much did I have on him? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Oh, what an idiot. Sometimes you just overcomplicate these races. And that was an example of it. All right, Newmarket. There'll be a big storyline to come here. But first of all, Rebel's Romance, a debut on turf. He was considered good enough at the start of the season to be Godolphin's number one for the Dubai World Cup. That did not work out. He was beaten 25 and 27 lengths respectively. He was favorite for this race when we talked about it on Thursday. After the show came out, the market completely changed. Rebel's Romance went to be the outsider of the field in Universal Order, who we liked, became favorite. But by the off time, and I remember this vividly, Rebel's Romance was 4-1 as they were loading, goes off 9-4. Do not tell me the Godolphin do not back their horses, because they bloody well do. This fella has come in for a massive amount of support and has blitzed the machine.
Yeah, big, good-looking horse. And I think there are decent animals behind him. You know, Camari, he was a Royal Ascot winner. Stole, you know, decent yardsticks. I think this Rebel's Romance a bit better than a listed horse. Look, his dam was good. He's absolutely gigantic. I've seen him win a couple of times, and you know, he's lightly raced for a four-year-old, and I think he's on the up. Where they go next, I don't really know. How good he is, he's still improving. It'd be interesting.
Is he a horse that's sent to Germany for one of those group races over there, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I've ridden in a couple of them before for Saeed, and Charlie used to send horses there. It would make sense, you know, realistically. In time, I suppose he might be a horse for them to go back to Dubai with next year, and they mightn't be in too much of a rush with him.
Yeah, maybe he's maybe he's a fella they'll give a go on the dirt for the Breeders' Cup Classic. Maybe they'll try and arc him that way. This is a listed race at Newmarket. I don't want to be getting ahead of ourselves too much here, but it was such a good, it was such a good performance that I don't see why you wouldn't step on into strong group company on the international stage next time.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And the horse obviously doesn't mind decent quick ground, you know, although he's massive.
He's built like a chaser. He really is a very impressive physical specimen. Speaking of international globe trotting, Pogo. Listen, Trushan was a standout, and I'll be completely honest and say I went looking for value elsewhere because it seemed too obvious. Pogo has beaten Sunray Major and Lana Akesh last time out, and I was of the same mindset. I was like, well, I think Sunray Major would turn the form around. And this fella and the market reacted the same way. He's drifted out. But he's proven himself immensely here. He's competed in Saudi Arabia, in Dubai, in Bahrain. He's a proper globetrotter, and now he's taken two nice prizes in the UK as well. He's a serious horse.
Yeah, he's very, very tough. He's got a lot of gate speed. He likes to dominate. He tries very hard, and he's been a very good horse to Kieran Schumacher. I actually won a handicap on him, ages ago, a class two, and I thought, you know, that's his sort of level, and his form didn't hold up after that. And he's managed to recapture and improve an awful lot. He's a six-year-old. I mean, he's an extraordinary small horse with a big heart.
Small horse, big heart, and a whole lot of talent as well. And as Pogo gets the better of Sunray Major. Then at the Curra, the Gain Railway Stakes, this is what I was kind of alluding to with you earlier on about horses acting up and doing a bit of show jumping.
Yeah, Blackbeard.
Blackbeard must have been doing some dressage because he was dancing down at the start, and he was a nightmare for Ryan Moore and for the stalls handlers. He was bucking out. He was kicking. He could have done serious damage to somebody.
Yeah, he had a few bites at people. Look, some good horses get a little bit angry like that. In the race and everything, he doesn't pose any problems. And I don't think it's anything we need to panic about. It's interesting to notice. I don't think they're going to be able to train it out of him either. I would imagine that's kind of just the way he is before he races. It was a shame he didn't go on and win, but I was delighted to see Shartash win, really. I think the young rider is really going places, Ben Cohen. He won a small field, but a decent race. He beat Asia Kings at Nace the time before, and I thought he got a clever ride, a real clever ride, and I was pleased he got up on time. You know, winning those sort of races when you ride like that is great confidence. Ben Cohen took his time, dragged him back and produced him at precisely the right time, and he got it right. So big pat in the back to him.
And Johnny Murta was talking to Nick Luck on Racing TV, and he was saying that it's a very unusual situation for the Aga Khan team to be in, because Johnny was ringing and saying, I want to enter this fella in the Phoenix.
Like, yeah.
What? An Aga Khan bred horse that's showing this much speed at two. So it's an unusual situation for them to be in, but he does have that speed. He is very exciting. He's an invincible spirit out of a Dubawi mare. And the ultimate aim for Johnny, as long as he can get there and keep him sound, is the 2,000 guineas. And you can see it. That speed is there.
Yeah, it's a long way away, and the horse isn't massively scopey, but he's big enough. Invincible Spirit doesn't need any introduction. He put Sire Kingman and so many good fillies. He's been at the Irish National Stud for many years. I remember seeing him ages ago and being very impressed, and lovely to see Johnny to have a good one for the Aga Khan, who we saw them team up to such success when he was riding.
Yeah, it's tremendous stuff. I remember being at the Royal meeting with him, and Ed made a joke afterwards because he was interviewing, actually it was the Derby, he was interviewing the Aga Khan on Derby Day at Epsom, and the director was saying, ask him if he'll train one for you, and Johnny just kind of just went back to you, Ed. And Ed was saying afterwards, and he said it on air, but he said it in the production meeting afterwards. He was like, why didn't you ask him to send a couple to you? Put him on the spot on air. But he's getting them on merit, and he deserves it. And look, Johnny made it very clear about 2 years ago. He doesn't want to be known as Johnny Murta, incredibly legendary jockey. He wants to be known as Johnny Murta, trainer. And he's getting that recognition for all the hard work. I mean, Caroline, when Betfair were involved with the show, before Better Offers came along, Caroline was talking about the amount of work and effort that goes on there. And look, he's learned from the best as well. He's learned from Aidan O'Brien, from John Ox, and he's clearly using all of that knowledge combined with his own skills to become an incredibly talented trainer.
Yeah, no, I take my hat off to him. I spent a morning riding out with him this winter, and I'll definitely go back there again. I thought he was terrific as a jockey, someone I idolised. I'm thrilled that they're getting the quality of horse they need to compete at the top level.
He's a class act. He's a lovely guy to work with as well. I did the last ATR shift from Dundalk with Johnny Murta, and he's just such a cool guy, and really, really enjoy talking to him. It's terrific that he's got this horse, and best of luck to him going forward. I think the Phoenix is going to be a difficult race for everybody with this fella in the lineup. That being said, with the way Blackbeard acted beforehand, it's interesting to hear you say, I don't see how they get that out of him. Little Big Bear is to come, and he looks a very exciting prospect, particularly when you look at that overhead footage of him winning at Royal Ascot. You understand when you look at the drone footage just how much ground he made up there. So it's going to be an exciting race with Little Big Bear coming in to take on Shartash.
Look, these races have taken some winning over the past however long it's existed. Some absolute superstars have won it in the past, and I wouldn't like to nail any horse to the mast at the moment, but I just love the competition in Ireland. There's couple of stables that we always expect to be winning these races, but then like Aidan O'Brien, Dermot Weld and Joe Lyons, but then there are guys coming through with the quality that they need to compete.
Spot on. Just a final word on Blackbeard, because I do feel as though he did throw it away at the start. Is that going to be a concern now going forward with him?
No, I think they'll just take him down as late as they can and keep him as chilly as possible, and getting that kind of angry is never ideal, but it won't stop him from running in the race. I think that's the key. We must remember that he's not actually dispelling that much energy. It's just you want them to focus and relax and kind of concentrate on the task in hand, but you can't go pulling and dragging out of him to make him do that. It kind of has to be his own idea, so I don't think they'll be focusing too much on and getting too stressed out about it. It kind of is what it is.
Yeah, 100%, my friend. And it's going to be interesting to see how all of these horses develop. One of the things I love about flat racing as well is all of these exciting, talented juveniles coming through, and who knows how high they can reach. Same applies to Statuette. They were talking about the guineas after this performance. Don't know if I'd go that far, but she's the daughter of Justify, out of Immortal Verse, which makes her a half to Tenebrisium, or Tenebrism, whichever the pronunciation
Tenebrism.
Is.
Yeah, Tenebrism. Yeah.
There we go. We're there now. Look, Aidan talked about just how much he loves this filly in the Royal Ascot preview. They waited for as long as they could to get her to run there. They felt the ground was just a little bit too firm, and that she hadn't quite come out of the race, that she would need a little bit more time. So they've come here instead, and she has bolted up.
Yeah, she's a beautiful type. When we say she bolted up, to the eye, I don't think she's that impressive, but I think if you go another furlong, she'd have won by five. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah. Like, he never had to get that serious with her, and it was never in doubt. I think she's a filly that will definitely improve for going further and improve with time. You're watching her walk, she's an absolute beauty. She really oversteps from behind, and everything is moving. She's very, very fluid. So I enjoy watching a horse like that. I love the way she puts her head down and she relaxes and she does everything. And I hope she continues to improve it. To be honest, like, those are the sort of horses that make watching top quality flat racing enjoyable. And we can get on the kind of international story, being by Justify, who obviously won a Triple Crown. He was by Scat Daddy. Then No Name Ever is by Scat Daddy, but Justify and Scat Daddy aren't—they're completely different type of horses. You know, No Name Ever was a very sharp, strong, powerful sprinter. Justify was a middle distance type of horse with a lot of height and scope, and you know, it's just nice to see this sort of thing emerging.
Yeah, they were actually concerned about the ground for her, but she's handled it well. And to emphasize again, when I say bolted up, I'm very much in the mindset of you that if this was a slightly further distance, 6.5, 7, she just wins in cruise control. And I felt she was always going to win. And look, there's some exciting horses in behind her there, like Zirinsk and Geraldine's had a great weekend.
Yeah,
they think an awful lot of that filly, and she's buried her. And she's handled the ground as well. And to hear Aidan talking about the beautiful mind that she has, the great stride, the unbelievable physique, she's a horse that's hard not to get excited about. Whether or not you want to be taking the current prices on offer for the 1,000 guineas, I don't know. I suspect that she'd be very, very hard to beat in the Moigler.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
Statuette. There was a very strange thing that happened at the Curragh on Saturday. The second last and last in the St. James's Palace Stakes both won on the card, starting with Wexford Native. And I'm almost reluctant to say this publicly, but yeah, let's go for it. Jim Bulger was asked by Nick Luck, was it just throwing a dart, sending him to Royal Ascot? To which Jim Bulger replied, no, I thought he'd win. And they did. They did think that. But it just all went wrong at the start. He was a very backward type as a juvenile. He had a bit of a setback. So it's taken them a while to get him right. But he's getting there. There wasn't that much between him and Native Trail in the Irish 2000 Guineas. And I thought this was a smart performance as well.
Yeah. I thought it's brave and incredible management to get a horse from going over to Ascot from Ireland, running, getting them home again in one piece and preparing them to win a group race. I mean, it's a very difficult thing to do. I tip my hat at both Jim Bulger, firstly at Wexford Native, and Aidan O'Brien with Ackle. Those sort of things I would be fearful of doing myself as a trainer, because I suppose if it goes wrong, you've got to take the blame. But those guys obviously are well conditioned at dealing with the highs and the lows, and they both made the right call.
Yeah, it was terrific to see Wexford Native in the winner's enclosure, and then iCal. Wow. So he ended up being last. And again, Aidan O'Brien was in Royal Ascot, and Aidan O'Brien was saying to Nick Luck afterwards that he just got a little bit fired up. It was his first run of the season, and once it was very apparent to Ryan that things weren't going to go right for him, he just decided to nurse him home. He's won in very authoritative manner, though, here in over 10 furlongs in Group 3 company, to such an extent that they might have been thinking, should we run him in the Derby?
Yeah, I mean, they might have been thinking that, but obviously before that, they were very focused on sort of a mile campaign. And where will they go next with him? You know, it'd be interesting. I don't think the race was that strong, but he couldn't have done it any easier. And it was a very confident ride from Ryan Moore, you know?
Yeah, he's entered in a Group 3 in July. He's also got the Qatar Sussex Stakes and the Irish Champion Stakes as potential entries. But maybe they go pot hunting internationally with him. That's something I would be very much prepared to do. And he was fourth in a Group 1 in France last season. So, I don't know, I wouldn't be fearful of where they go next, but it was very unusual that an Aidan O'Brien, Ryan Moore horse returns 20-1 and wins. So fair play to those who kept the faith. I didn't, but if you were on board, well done. Sense of Duty takes the Group 3 at Newcastle for William Haggas and Tom Marquand. Haggas continues to be in tremendous form, and she bounds away from them, winning by 4.5 lengths.
Yeah, she was nearly going to be unlucky at Haydock, and she got up on the line. She's a fast improver. I love the way he's managed her. You know, he's spaced out her races. She's stepped up with every start, and she looks like a proper one. She couldn't have done it any more impressive. You know, slightly, I would just consider that. Remember, that was on the all-weather at Newcastle, and everything went perfectly in a competitive sort of black-type race on turf. It mightn't be as easy for her, but the way she's improving, she really could be a star, and it'd be interesting to see where he goes. You know, I think she's at the right trip. He'll obviously want to step her up in grade, but she might have to take on older horses later on. You know, will she go to France or something? I don't know. Maybe the Prix Maurice de Guise or something like that.
Yeah, they may very well be forced into going for a Group 1 next, but that
makes sense, you know. 6.5 furlongs, it would make sense, something like that.
Yeah, William Haggas said, "We'll plot carefully, but we'll be positive." So they'll definitely be heading for a Group 1 next. And then Frankie Dettori hasn't been.
Yeah.
There hasn't been anything said about Frankie recently. Lazoo wins the listed race, the Maureen Britton Memorial Empress Filly Stakes.
Yeah, incredible, you know, really, from Frankie. Like, He's in the headlines, and he goes there and he manages to do that on his only ride of the day on a filly that wasn't, you know, that strong in the betting. And it looked like the George Bowie filly for Kildare Stud was away and gone, and the acclamation. He ran her down. Look, you know, you never want to see relationships under a bit of strain. You know, I haven't spoken to Frankie, and I haven't spoken to Sadie or John, but it'll be interesting to see who comes in for those better rides, and whether Frankie will still ride in Spiral. I suspect, and I'm guessing, but I suspect he'll keep riding in Spiral. He said he's going to be busy over the next month with Foreign Action, but once he returns, there'll be lots of guys, lots of trainers, male and female, that we want to support him. You know, when he's hungry and riding well, he's a guy that every other jockey wants to be. And when they're, you know, when he's in a race with you, you fear him. He can get results out of horses that no one else can. I think he's when Frankie has a point to prove, he's dangerous, you know. And I mean that, like, he could be riding better than ever over the next couple of months. Time will tell, but he'll obviously need to get on the right horses. But remember, we wrote his career off before, and he found the Al Shikab job, and, you know, he's ridden for all these big owners before. No doubt they might want him to be riding their horses.
Yeah, that was kind of one of the things I was saying on TalkSport on Saturday, actually, is that he lost the Godolphin job. Look, relationships change. People change.
Yeah.
Dynamics change. It's just business.
It's life, yeah.
It's life, yeah. It's business, it's work, it's friendships. That's just the way things go. People change, people... you know, things that worked very well before don't work a year later. You need to be able to be fluid when it comes to these kind of things. This whole line that they're taking a sabbatical, I mean, let's just remind everybody, and I'm pretty certain that all of our listeners are very well informed on this, but just in case, the fact that Frankie Dettori is making a phone call Thursday morning to John Gosden and doesn't get a reply, and then his manager sees Holly Doyle and James Doyle jocked up, and they don't have a conversation then till the Friday, where they take the sabbatical. This is done, Oisin. Like, they are now, it's over. I don't see...
Well, I think we might have been a little bit misinformed there, you know. There's no doubt that there was perhaps a lack of communication, but I don't know if Pete Burrell is Frankie's manager when it comes to like media stuff and all that, but he doesn't live in Newmarket, and he doesn't really frequent the Gallops that often, and he definitely doesn't book Frankie's rides or speak to the racing offices. So I feel like we need to understand those comments, mightn't be as direct from the horse's mouth as they may seem.
Well, he should have shut up then. He shouldn't have said anything if that's the case. Like, it's a silly thing to say. Because you're putting pressure on the Goslins and you're putting pressure on Frankie.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. There was pressure on them as a result of those comments, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't help anybody. And it actually makes it look worse for Frankie. You're not helping your client with that line.
No, precisely, yeah. Precisely, but you understand where I'm coming from now, with all those facts, yeah, and the listeners, you can see where I'm coming from. I mean, Emily Upjohn slipped in the stalls. I think she'd have won the Oaks. Lord North, the blind was tucked in, and it's happened to me before. I haven't talked it out enough in the gate, and it's taken a second pull to get it off, and that's a real nightmare, and just these sort of things they can happen in class six cards and no one notices, but you don't want them to happen in the big races. That's doesn't matter who you are, that those sort of things are very frustrating.
Very much so. In some ways, like, there is this line out there and a viewpoint, which I get, that, in fact, actually asking Hugo Palmer about it, just to get his take, because obviously, and I'm very much aware, but I wasn't sure whether or not Hugo was going to lean into it. But he said that Frankie was responsible for two of the best days of his life, with Galileo Gold. Now, obviously Hugo did an awful lot of work there, but he loves him and he wants to use him as much as he can. But
the bottom line is most owners, like a massive USP is the fact that, you can have one of the best jockeys in the world. For me, he's just incredible. He's outstanding to ride your horses. And, Hugo and other big trainers will be making full use of that while they can. And at the end of the day, Frankie keeps the ride on Inspire and wins more Group 1s on her. Maybe the relationship that was so successful over the last few years will rebuild. I mean, that will take time or whatever, but, I could see that. I could genuinely see that happening, if things went right with the important sort of horses. But let's see.
Yeah. You mentioned Frankie keeping the ride on Inspire. Why do you say that? Why do you say that the Thompsons and Chiefly Park will want to keep him?
Yeah, I think he's had a lot of success for them over the last couple of years. I mean, Ryan obviously has also, as have I. But Frankie has been doing it for them for 30 years, and I don't think they'll see the need to really replace him. But I'm guessing, I just, those sort of things cross my mind, and I'm obviously not in the situation. I'm just speaking how I see it,
Yeah, because it's an interesting viewpoint, and I don't disagree with it, but I just wanted you to expand on it. The reason I say that is because there haven't been owners at Gosden's coming out questioning this or saying, well, we still want to use Frankie. Like, Emily Upjohn's owner has come out and said, well, we trust Gosden's are the best and we trust them to get the right jockey. Bjorn Nielsen doesn't want him on at all. I mean, that's very clear. I don't think he wanted him on even going up to Royal Ascot, and he was fuming, he was seething with what happened in Stradivarius. And other owners aren't coming out, stepping out of line and going, no, we want Frankie on board. They're trusting the Gosden's to do what's right. And I see that as a very interesting angle in all of this, that no one is coming out to rush to his defense and go, we want Frankie still on board.
I don't think there's any need to, there was plenty made of it in the press, and I suppose the owners that kind of still want Frankie, it won't be an issue. And the owners that would prefer to use someone else, then that's fine as well, you know. And it's fine now, particularly that it's all been made out in the open that he's not going to ride everything. Does that make sense?
So. It does. Do you think if Frankie had come out after the Stradivarius ride and said, look, I could have done better there, but what a great horse. Instead, he just talked about what a great horse he was. Last year, it was Dylan Brandon McGonagall's fault. A young kid gets bollocked by one of the greatest of all time. That doesn't help Dylan. I think Dylan just moved on from it. It was like, you know, whatever. This is the thing. Jockeys have a very... It's a tough thing with Frankie. Like, I get how punters go, oh, what a legend. And I do that. And look,
yeah,
hands up here. I have the briefest of cameos in the Dettori documentary on Sky. Briefest of cameos. Close your eyes for a second. Gone. But still, I'm very honored to do that. I admire Frankie for all that he's done. I admire the way he's bounced back from losing the job at Godolphin, from how he bounced back from Al Shikab, the work that he's done with Gosden. But I think if he had just said something critical about himself that day, Gosden might have had a very different attitude. But the next day, when Inspiral wins, it's that comment to Rishi. Rishi says, what did Frankie have to say? He goes, well, when I finally got his attention, when he stopped doing his other job, which is waving to the crowd. You're getting stuck in. You've just won a Group 1, and you're needling the jockey beforehand. You're not even going, well, you know, great ride from Frankie, and then say that. No, straight away you're having a pop. Which just shows strain, frustration, annoyance, and then he kept that up. And it was there all last year as well. Like, Frankie knows what John Gosden was saying about him after last year and throughout the entire season. Let's remember, when the horse won at Doncaster, he said, Rishi Basad, or it was Francesca, actually. Cheska asks, and what did Frankie have to say? And Gosden's response was, well, he's finally admitted it was his fault that he lost the Gold Cup. He was clinging on to it then. So Frankie knows all this, and he could have just gone, look, I could have been better there. But he didn't. He didn't even do that.
Yeah, I suppose, look, for me, I just put my hands up when I feel like I've made an error. And some jockeys have different approaches, and that's just the way I do it. And I try and keep the relationships. You know, I'm younger, I suppose, and I do mess up. So I like just, you know, getting it out of the way rather than it becoming a big issue. And it's interesting the way different people do it.
You put your hands up even when it wasn't your fault. Like, Cameco wouldn't have got the Derby trip in a horse box, and yet you were bashing yourself on social media in that video. So I admire all of that. But I think that Frankie could have helped himself there. I don't think he helped himself at all. And look, it's not. Well, let's be completely honest about it. It's great seeing this play out in public. We got the popcorn out. We got the butter. We got the salt on it. You know, just keep on going. What do you think now, Gosden? What do you think now? Frankie, what are you going to do? Here's what I would say. Like, Mick Kinnan lost the job at Coolmore, and a lot of people thought that was him done. 2009, along comes See the Stars. He'd had a great career even post Ballydoyle, came back and rode for them a few times, and then along comes See the Stars. Like, you don't know what's around the corner. Frankie's still going to ride winners. Gosden's still going to train winners. It all just keeps on going, but it's the end as far as I can see it. That's my view. The Curra has a capacity of 30,000. They got 12,000 at the week. Actually, they got less than 12,000 for the Irish Derby.
Okay. That's a shame.
11,300 is what they got. That's, you're charging 50 quid, folks. That's what ends up happening.
Yeah. I know.
A shame.
It really is.
Yeah. They're saying that, oh, well, we don't have queues. Come on, man. You need to be getting in people into the... As Richie Forrestal said, it's going to remain the great white elephant of Irish racing if they don't improve things pretty quickly. What was your highlight from the weekend, Oisin?
Westover in the Irish Derby. I know it's not it's not very inventive, but he was outstanding, you know.
No, same for me. It has to be Westover. A 7-length winner of an Irish Derby. That's hugely impressive. Yeah. Show jumping, how has that been treating you? It looks like you're having a whale of a time.
Yeah, I am. I love it. I've got nice horses, and it's been good fun. I actually had a fall at Hickstead, but I'm fine. I prefer if I didn't come off. If I could stay on board, it'd be much better.
What? Where did that happen? What category?
In the Hickstead Speed Derby. It wasn't the class I wanted it to happen in, you know.
And up until that, I know you were excited about taking part in it, but up until the fall, like, how were things going in that event?
I was clear, and she'd been jumping great. I've got a couple of horses, I think the video was actually doing the rounds on WhatsApp because I took the bridle and everything off with me, and it was very entertaining, I think, but I can promise you I was very, very embarrassed.
Oh, listen, man, these things happen. Don't worry about it. Nice, though, that your colleagues are just passing the video around. Have you seen Oisín fall? The bridle comes off and everything. What's next for you in the show jumping world?
I actually think I'll have a week or two off. And I was supposed to be going to Bowlsworth this week, but just trying to manage the horses as best we can and keep them all in good form. So they'll probably have this week off, you know.
What's a great thing to be doing, and it's fantastic to see you still active with the horses as well. And listen, it's going to be next season before you even know it, my friend. And by then, it's, you know, you're back, and that's something to look forward to. Plus, there won't be 300 races taken out of the calendar. My goodness, what an absolute farce that
whole thing. I know.
Jesus. But I'm looking forward to having you back on the track, my friend. And in the meantime, looking forward to chatting to you again on the final furlong soon as well. Oisín, thanks so much for your company.
Cheers, Eric.
And thank you for listening. Hopefully you've enjoyed listening to Oisín's take on the weekend's racing. I'm sure that you have. We've got our weekend preview on Thursday, as per usual, and some special shows coming your way very soon as well. Take care. Be safe. God bless.
The Final Furlong Podcast is proudly brought to you by our official syndicate partner, All About Sunday. The latest trainer to join our ranks is Donald McCain. To join us, download the app or visit allaboutsunday.com. The ultimate racehorse ownership experience. And by our official betting partner, Kaluki Sportsbook. Kaluki offer betting on all sports. Immediate interaction with experienced traders, with instant withdrawals and the best odds guaranteed on UK and Irish horse racing. Kaluki also have betting pitches at tracks across the UK, including additional ones at Cheltenham. Join us now at kalukisportsbook.co.uk.